We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Ted Diabolica, finger on the pulse. It's a beautiful, beautiful fall day in a lovely November. And we have a great show today. That was just DJ Never Forget. What's up, buddy?
Hey, man. How's it going?
It's going great. Who are we just listening to?
Well, they're sitting with me in studio right now, so I guess they can introduce themselves. Hello, guys.
Hey.
We have Lemonade in studio today.
Woo, woo.
Yeehaw.
What's up?
And that was just a DeLorean remix of one of your tracks.
It was.
They really put that DeLorean sound all over that track.
They put the DeLorean sound over everything they do.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that's, yeah, so much good. Welcome. How you guys doing
Thanks
today?
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Well.
I'm glad that we can make this happen.
Yeah.
You guys are going to be spinning for us all today.
Love to.
And talking about the band.
Sure.
Sweet. All right.
Awesome. Good.
So that's coming.
That's good.
That's coming up later.
Hey, by the way. Great weekend.
Yeah, great weekend. We also have Marvin Taylor, who is the director of the Fails Collection from NYU.
Great guy.
A little bit. Great guy. We saw him speak a couple weeks ago. And yeah, who's our sponsor today?
Oh, man. You know who it is.
Tell me.
Drive out to Red Hook. Let's go to Fairway Market.
Oh, I love that place.
I keep telling you that you should go out there and hang out. It's a good place. It's a good place to take
girls.
When
we sign up for Zipcar.
Oh, yeah. Fine. but yeah, so Fairway Market. A few locations in the city, but the one out in Red Hook is really awesome. You can go out there and just buy a bunch of
Our neighbor
food.
Was just out there. She just showed me like a $30 jug of apple juice, organic apple juice she bought.
Yeah.
It was really good.
I've never seen so much apple juice, but it's awesome. It's really great. You can walk out the pier. Perfect for a day like today.
How does one get there?
I think you take the B61 if you don't do it, or you can scam your way onto the IKEA ferry from the city.
Ooh.
But you didn't hear that from us.
Yeah. But it was a really, really good weekend.
Great weekend. We were at the Bell House yesterday for Derek and Andrew's Brooklyn Beefsteak. Which we talked about last week, and it was awesome.
It was awesome.
Big up to McSorley's.
Just so people weren't listening, Beefsteak, it's a tradition that, as we learned yesterday, started in Brooklyn, was kept alive in Jersey. And essentially, it's what politicians used to do to buy votes from the working class. They would pretty much have these events where it was all you could drink beer and all you could eat beef tenderloin.
But they stepped it up because it was, Pat LaFrieda sponsored all the beef, and it was sliders, tenderloin, and then short ribs at the end. Yeah. And I know that you were concerned about not getting enough.
I want to say that I wasn't concerned about not getting enough. I was concerned about the service. Which in those events, there was like 200 people there.
Yeah.
There was like 10 tables, and like then each table had like the front section and then the back. So you're talking about, and then, you know, ancillary things. You're talking about like 30 different stations. And to be fair, the guys to the right of us were seriously at like a 3-1 ratio. They had hats. Yeah, they were like really like very good at flagging people down.
It was good. The short rib, but
so congratulations to the guy. They just graduated from Wesleyan too. So
seriously, two innovators with who like beef and beer as much as we do. Oh yeah, McSorley's unlimited.
Yeah, I mean it was like we crawled out.
Sounds
of there.
Pretty fun.
We were like leaving. They were like we're still putting more meat on the grill.
I had a similar thing in the hometown, Half Moon Bay, where I grew up with the Chamarrita Festival. It's an Azorean Portuguese thing.
Oh really?
And it started, I think, because there was a there's some famine or a drought. I forgot. Something caused famine in the Azores. And then right when they didn't know how they were going to survive week to week, it was really, really running dry. The queen sent over a bunch of provisions. And so for them, they thought it was an act of God. And then now the tradition is they all donate beef. And the farmer who donates the most beef for this huge feed they have, it's the Holy Ghost Festival, right? For this huge feed, whoever gives the most beef, his daughter gets to be the Chamarrita queen.
Oh. Have you been to it?
Oh, I grew up in it. Yeah.
Oh, you grew up in it. Oh, yeah.
I grew up around.
Is it awesome?
It's really fun.
Damn, that's awesome.
It's marinated beef with like a red wine, and it's really simple. Actually, it's like onions and red wine, I think, and then they serve it on big, crusty kind of Portuguese bread.
Do you eat the bread?
I do eat the bread.
Okay, but
because it soaks up the sauce. Imagine like a French dip.
Because the tradition of the beefsteak is you're not supposed to eat the bread. You're supposed to stack it as kind of bragging rights of how much beef you've eaten.
I mean, like, I know that we put down a decent amount of beef, but there were some stacks of bread that I was just like, holy crap. It was literally like 100 pieces of bread neatly stacked.
That's why at sushi buffets, they have rules where, like, you have to eat the rice.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Interesting. So that was Sunday. No, that's actually, I didn't even know that it was like a, that's good to know there's other, like, massive feast traditions.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was great. And then we also hit up K-Town this weekend for, Vice just did a new blog with
VBS
with David Chang. Big shout out to John Martin for sharing that with us. Oh, and shout out to Shannon for tuning in as well. Yeah. But David Chang went to Mad for Chicken in K-Town, and it was probably like the most crispy, some of the most delicious.
It's twice fried chicken.
And then soju, this like, I don't know, this like
Korean vodka.
Yeah, it's which I'd never heard of before. And it was like passion
coming at the, I mean, I guess they don't.
I think it's rice, distilled rice.
Yeah. But they served it. The guy assured us that if we didn't drink it cut, we would be not able to walk out of the place. And I was like, all right.
You know, in San Francisco, you could serve soju with a beer and wine license.
Yes, it's actually Sam Mason last night was telling me that K-Town is the only place where I think they can serve liquor without a liquor license because it's so steep in the tradition.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know,
okay,
drinking and food, right?
Yeah, but you know, but it was really good. We ended up getting two rounds because it was, and they had like just two different types of like hot and sweet.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. But all of that didn't really compare to Saturday night, which was the fixed 5-year anniversary at Santos.
Yeah, big shout out to JDH and Dave P. Like fixed, I mean. Sort of grew, I guess,
yeah,
you know, part of, you know, you starting know and making guys, time right? And then making time into fixed is like the more a little bit grown up party, I would say. And just like, it was unbelievable. Basement Jacks were amazing. And who was that singer?
I wish I was there.
Who was it singing? They had some...
I got her name last night from Travis, but I honestly cannot remember. But she, they, you know, they warmed up the crowd for about 40 minutes, and they brought out this like vocal, just you know, vocalist.
English vocalist who
diva.
Just
diva.
Oh my god! Wonderful. I mean, capital D-I-V-A.
You know, 5'5", like just huge voice. I mean, I almost feel like she didn't need a microphone.
And I think the best, I've been to Santos before, but I don't think I've ever seen Santos go off like that. Like, the bartenders were freaking, like, the bartenders were dancing on top of the bar and, like, raining down everybody with, like, the soda guns.
When they played Raindrops,
yeah.
They just sprayed the, it was kind of almost a little bit too much, but they were so excited.
They were so excited. I
mean, yeah.
But, big shout out to them. It was really just, like, it was really amazing. Had a little teary-eyed for Studio B. Just because, you know, they're the ones who helped us get in there. But congratulations to them and all that good stuff. And I'm sure they have, like, another amazing party coming out this week. And speaking of amazing parties, we got ours this Saturday, I'm sorry, November 14th with Famous Friends. We're bringing in Russ Chimes from the Valley Collective this Saturday night at the Space on 8th. And it's going to be awesome. Captain Kurt Live, we're DJing, Bradley D, VDRK. Free before 11:30 with the RSVP, which is, I'm drawing a blank right now, but I'll have for you after the break. We got a song coming up. We got Lemonade in the studio. We got some special food guests coming up, and you listen to Snacky Tunes. Shout out to Jack Inslee and RecTech. Let's go.
That was just the Louis LaRoche remix of Basem Jack's Raindrops, a highlight. They also played some song that was super epic towards the end that had like this 2-minute build that I, you know, didn't happen to ask anybody. We're going to get Lemonade set up in here. Do you want to help Darren swap out that stuff?
Sure.
I'm going to do an interview. So on our food guest today is a wonderful man who... We met at a lecture a couple weeks ago at the Fails Library, and Marvin, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Marvin, hi, how are you?
Hey, good, how you doing?
I mean, I could do it, but you could probably do it better justice. Would you like to introduce yourself to Snacky Tunes and tell people what you do and where you do it?
Sure, I'm the director of the Fails Library at New York University, and that's the Rare Book and Manuscript Collection here. And so I keep track of our historical collections in fiction and food studies, as well as the downtown art scene from the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
That is amazing. What really struck me is they have a massive, massive culinary book collection, correct?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I think we're the second largest collection now in the U.S.
How many books are in your collection?
We're somewhere around 22,000 volumes right now.
Which is mind-blowing to me. I mean, I know it's a huge library, but 22,000 volumes is just so big.
Sure, and that's mostly 20th century food materials. There are only maybe 600 or 800 titles before 1900.
I mean, you and I talked about this a bit, but do you want to give the listeners an idea of, like, you know, what makes up the collection and, you know, what they could find what you could find in the archives?
Sure. Well, the collection here supports the programs at NYU, including the food studies program, which is over in the School of Ed, and Marion Nestle, who was wrote Food Politics and What to Eat, started that program over there about 18 years ago, but the libraries had really never built a collection to support food studies. And so she came to me and said that she'd heard about this great collection of like 7,000 or 8,000 books that we should try to take a look at and see if we couldn't get it here, because there really wasn't a place in New York where you could really come and study, you know, food of the last 100 years. And so we went and looked. It was a collection of Cecily Brownstone, who was the AP syndicated food writer for 39 years. And a very close friend of James Beard's. And in as much as sort of Beard was like the father of American cuisine, Cecily was sort of his, she sort of sometimes called herself Beard's Beard. she went with him to all these events and things. And she was an amazing, amazing woman. But she built her own reference and research collection because a lot of libraries weren't collecting food materials. If they did, they thought of it as home economics instead of really like a food collection the way we do. And so we were able to get Cecily's collection to start things here. And basically, it was like acquiring 60 years of a curator's work and putting together a really great collection of food material. And after that, people started donating amazing things to us to really build a center in New York for people who are serious about studying food and in all of its repercussions. So Dahlia Carmel gave us her extensive collection, about 8,000 books. She continues to give. And Ladies Home Journal, the Beard Foundation, and a couple of other places have given us their libraries. So suddenly we ended up with 22,000 books and almost, but not quite, the largest collection in the U.S.
So, I mean, it kind of grew like at leaps and bounds once you provided a home for this.
Absolutely. I think the time was just right for this kind of collection to be built here. And our collection, we have a slightly different approach to it than some of the more traditional collections. I mean, some collections grew up because people were teaching home economics. Others grew up in the 70s because of the women's movement and sort of interest in counterintuitive women's interest in food collections, sort of feminist interest. But our collection is much broader than that, and those collections were too, but our collection really looks at all aspects of food, from high dining to ethnic eating to the various cultural aspects of food, and with a special focus on New York City in terms of getting archival materials, personal papers of chefs, and archives of like purveyors of fine foods, et cetera, et cetera. So we have a slightly different approach, a sort of culture studies approach to the history of food.
Yeah, well, I mean, when we spoke, that was easily one of the most interesting points, that a lot of these food studies programs grew out of, you know, more women's-based studies as opposed to actual food or culinary background.
Sure, no, I think that was really certainly true. And Barbara Haber, who was at the Schlesinger Library, she's one of the pioneers in building these kinds of collections. So she said the other day she got a bit of flack from the first wave feminists when she started talking about how important food was. Certainly, people think very differently about that today. But we don't just want to go the other way, the other end of things, and be, hyper-masculine world of the Escoffier Society or of, dare I say, all of these Iron Chef shows. But interestingly enough, we just celebrated a couple of weeks ago the donation of the papers of Les Dames d'Escoffier of New York, which was the first women's organization in the high-end food world. And they gave us their papers.
What can be found in papers like that? You know, what is the
In their particular case, it's minutes from all the meetings as they started to organize in the early 70s. And then they developed an internship program, and they give out funds to help women get involved in high-end dining and, you know, restauranteuring, et cetera. So there's, you know, a lot about the development of that organization. Other collections have photographs. You might have audio, video, all these things which we call primary resources for the study of the history of food in this country.
Now, if I was, you know, how would someone get access to this collection?
Well, we're not a browsing collection, as I like to say. You know, people don't come here to look for a marinara recipe.
Right.
but what they are, but, you know, so anyone who's a student or a faculty member or someplace, or a food writer or somebody in the business who has a, you know, research project, they can send a note to fails.library@nyu.edu, and chances are they'll, you know, be allowed to have access, you know, to work on a very specific research topic. And that happens all the time here. I think the food studies collections quickly become the second most popular collection that we have, and that's growing all the time.
That's wonderful. Just a couple more things. One of the great things about the talk is that you had recently gotten something, I believe, from the Sherry family donated to you, correct?
Well, sort of. I mean, we actually purchased something related to Louis Sherry's catering empire, I think is the way to talk about it.
Right. And could you just explain about it? Because, I mean, that was the thing that kind of had us perk up in our seats, that you got your hands on this type of document, or
yep,
ledgers even.
It was one of the most amazing things that I had seen in quite a while. I got a letter out of the blue from a dealer who said that he had the Louis Sherry archive. And I'm like, okay, because Sherry, I knew, was a really, really important person turn of the last century in terms of catering to the 400. And so what this consisted of was four volumes of menus that had been planned for his catering business. He ran a couple of very large restaurants as well, but he was catering to the very, very upper crust. And so this would be important for understanding the role of, say, French haute cuisine within the U.S. in that period, within a given echelon of people. And so, you know, he sent it on approval, and I looked at it, and there were over 2,500 menus. It lists the person who was the client, whether that was the Roosevelts or the Carnegies or J.P. Morgan, or, you know, you'd go on down the list, and it lists what was served. But then more fascinating perhaps than that is it lists how many servants were needed, what kind of china was used, what kind of wines were served, et cetera, et cetera. So it really is this amazing cultural document, sort of cultural history seen through the lens of high-end dining, these dinners for 500 people that were thrown, you know, for weddings, especially a lot of those kinds of sort of festive banquet kinds of things, but also it's an index to the kinds of ingredients that were being used in a period from 1891 to 1930, and this is Louis Sherry, who was a self-made man, started as a water boy, and ended up sort of being, you know, the probably one of the great gourmands of the period in New York City.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I mean, I can only imagine the resources that if, you know, chefs wanted to do a Golden Era recreation series type thing, that could just be invaluable, or even for research alone.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Raw data.
And for all kinds of research. I was looking through it the other day with someone. I was thinking, like, boy, if we just did an index to this thing of the kinds of things that were served, the number of servants, and sort of, there are all kinds of fascinating data that you could get out of it in a sort of sociological way, quite differently from just, you know, in terms of the development of a certain kind of taste and haute cuisine and sort of the gourmet aspects of the collection. I always look at things and try to say, well, how many dissertations are in something if we're going to get it?
Right.
And because this is just, it's unbelievable the amount of research that can be done. And this is all that's left, these four volumes. It was probably more like 100 volumes, but somewhere along the way, as the Sherry company changed hands, the stuff got thrown away. So we're lucky that we have, you know, 2,500 menus to work from.
That's amazing. So one last thing, when you and I spoke this morning, you said that you have a big project that you're working on, and it says the James Beard and his Circle and the American Food Revolution. And I was wondering if you could expand on that a little bit.
Sure. Well, you know, interestingly enough, people in the industry don't write much down. they're too busy cooking. And so you sometimes don't have any archives or any papers left. Beard actually did keep things, and we have about 35 boxes of his collection. But a lot of people don't write anything down, so you have to do oral histories to actually capture the memories of what it was like in a given period. And so we were very, very lucky that Judy Weinraub, who had worked in Washington for many years as a journalist writing about food, was interested in doing an oral history project with us. And she was especially interested in Beard and his changes and his thoughts about American food. And so I was very keen to get the stories of some of the people who knew Beard, because, of course, he's gone and many of his contemporaries are. But there was a slightly sort of the next generation below him who he helped encourage. And so we thought, wow, we should go out and interview everyone and get their memories of what the food circles were like in the 60s and 70s. And so we've been working for the past year on that with a grant from the Leon Levy Foundation, which is just fantastic. We're going to come away with about, 50 interviews of people who were involved in Beard Circle, but then also people who have been involved in what we're thinking of as the American food revolution, what's happened in the past 15 years as people really start to pay much more attention to eating healthfully. And, food has certainly become a national obsession, which is really a great thing.
And when does that come out, or how do people have access to that?
Well, what we're going to do is we're doing transcriptions. So the oral history is done, with audio, and then transcriptions are going to be available here in the library for people who want to come in and do research. And, of course, they'll be indexed so that, you have all the names, et cetera. It's a little easier to gain access to. But they'll be available primarily here at NYU.
Awesome. Well, Marvin, thank you so much for joining us.
Inviting me.
We appreciate it, and we look forward to the project, and we will be in touch.
Yep, thanks very much.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right, everybody. That was Marvin Taylor, director of the Fales
awesome
Collection.
Guy. Nice job,
really,
buddy.
Thanks. I was really excited for that interview.
No, it's just one of those, just one of those amazing resources. Only New York, the other side.
Oh, I feel like it's just people that this show has kind of opened doors to meeting that we would normally never meet. So, and he's a nice guy. And he has there's a whole other history to him that if you, he has a couple books written that we just can't go into, but looking at it. So, we've got Lemonade with us, gentlemen. How are you all set up over there?
Yeah, we got it.
I think we're ready to go.
All right, so why don't you guys have you guys spin some tunes, and then we'll come back and do an interview, and then more tunes, and interview, then more tunes.
Sounds like a good idea.
Sounds awesome. Good to me.
And a big shout out to Roberta's.
Yeah,
the pizza.
Yeah.
Thank you, Roberta's.
And this Friday, they're doing another fundraiser for the rooftop party.
Yeah, it's called the Slasher Strip Club Party, Friday the 13th at Star Space, 108 Star. Fundraising hell for 1 acre farm in Brooklyn. I believe this is the rooftop, right?
Yeah, it was that same thing they had a few weeks ago with Joel Bastianich
and I think
Tom Moylan.
We're DJing, and Lauren Flax, who is like three-time guest on Snacky Tunes, is DJing. And
shout out to Flax.
And a bunch
go
of other
your,
people.
Go see your DJ at CineSpace in LA tomorrow night.
Yeah, so yeah, we're excited. Anyway, here we go. Lemonade, Snacky Tunes. Thank you.
think like we don't need to mask. You want to sit within a year one class. Just give us some class. Say. I beg your pardon, what did you say?
Do it!
Message. Say we no need to mask. Say we no need to mask. Say we no need to mask. We in a year one class. Hey, we no need to mask. Say we no need to mask. Say we no need to mask. We in a year one class.
You drop out a rum tree in a rum glass. Drop out a rum tree in a rum glass. You're bound to hurt your ass. Stang, stang, stang. Well, they say you're bound to hurt your ass. So I,
hey, yeah. Come in, say we no need famous. Say we no need famous. Some of them a beer choya, some of them a beer grass. Some can't find them way through, them a get lost. But no, we no need famous. Say we no need famous.
Cause we no need famous, we in a A1 class. So pull your screw body boo, chihuahua. Pull your screw body boo. Me say the man Naphtali have a IQ 222.
Me say the man right rocking have a IQ. Say 222. So what? We no need famous. Say we no need famous. Say we no need famous. We in a year one class. Cause some of them a drink rum out a rum glass. Cause some of them a pass and them a say yo to the bars.
We no need famous. We no need famous. We no need famous, we in a A1 class. You drop out a rum tree in a rum glass. Drop out a rum tree in a rum glass. So me no need famous, me no need famous. Me no need famous, me in a A1 class. Say when me go a dance, me have a spliff in a me hand. Me dance with the woman, them one by one. That's how me get me satisfaction. Stang, stang, will it how me get me satisfaction? Hey, come me say, Nim no need famous. Me no need famous. Me no need famous, we in a A1 class.
Hey, we no need famous. Say we no need famous. Say girl, don't let your love cut across. Cause when you really get up, them a eat them breakfast. Me go in a the dance and me a figure rock. But we no need famous. Say we no need famous. Say we no need famous. We in a year one class.
I no brag, we a brag and I no boast, we a boast. Say when it come to mic, man, we really can toast. So we no need famous.
Hey, yeah.
We no need famous.
Tell them.
We no need famous.
Your radio, you will hear the advertisement saying so. Like get on, get up, mama, them others. Follow, get it all, the honors. As we stick up, all about with it. Tell it and everyone how cool is it. On the boat ride, they use it cool. On the bus ride, they use it cool. I tell you. In the party, they use it, yeah. In the disco, they use it, yeah. I tell you, the drinking whiskey, they use it, yeah. The drinking brandy, coke is it. I tell you, coke is it. Coke is it. Coke is it. Coke is it. Caribbean, Coke is rarely drink.
Deus ficou.
E na figa,
Deus ficou.
Até eu, em Vieira,
Deus é meu.
White in India,
Deus é meu.
Até eu, em San Lucia,
Deus é
meu. Hey everybody, welcome back to Snacky Tunes. That was just Lemonade dropping their first of two DJ sets on Snacky Tunes. I'm one half of Finger on the Pulse, Terry Diabolik, with me in the sweater, looking full on pizza. I think you just got pizza eyes.
It just hit me. So so why don't you guys introduce yourselves? I don't think we did a proper introduction. Names?
I'm Ben.
Eyes in the pizza prize.
Yeah.
I'm Alex.
Star signs. What's your like now?
What were some of the songs we just heard? What were some of those tunes?
The first tune, the synthy thing, was this group called Free Choice from Australia that I just stumbled upon. I think they're cool. And then followed by a Roy Ranking track. Followed by a Soca artist by the name of Poser, who I...
Sweet. I probably didn't know the name, kind of got lost in translation.
Yeah, most likely. I don't know. Artwork's really good on it, though. Like a big butt on it.
So you guys were just telling us in the break that you guys just came back from tour and played a crazy food party in San Francisco. Oh, you should try the calzone. It's really good. Get in there.
Tasty.
There's a reason why there's like a corner left. Yeah. Tell us about this food San Francisco party.
Well, I used to work at a place called Tartine Bakery, which is one of the best bakeries in my mind. Well, I think in a lot of people's. They won the James Beard Award.
It's pretty famous.
Last year. Yeah.
It's pretty well known.
I used to work there, and I met a friend, Chris, who was a chef at a place called the Slow Club, which is also in the Mission. And then he got really involved once he stepped up and he became executive chef, and then he moved over to Bar Tartine. He got really involved in what I like to think of as the DIY scene of food. So they, for instance, go and have a big goat roast in Sonoma County on someone's farm. They have some bands play, and then they make birria tacos for everyone. And they have someone with the masa pounding out tortillas, and they roast this big goat. And they always have these parties going on. The last one I played with an accordion trio I play in at a christening of a wood burning oven in the middle of the Mission. This time, our friend Mark, who's a friend of his from North Carolina, runs a magazine called Food and Sex, and so he flew us out for this party they were doing where they're roasting or barbecuing in a pit barbecue a 520-pound steer, I think.
Who brought that steer down?
I'm not sure, but everything they do, it's always donated from local farmers.
Oh.
So, for instance,
our friend Chris showed up to the show, like, reeking of beef.
Yeah.
Oh, I can only imagine.
How
I didn't smell him.
How was the steer?
He smelled awful.
Oh, did you get to eat it?
No, we had a flight out like the next morning.
Yeah, it was pretty. That was the only bummer.
We missed eating.
Wait a second. So they started cooking. How long did it take to cook that thing?
I think they started at 10 o'clock at night because the party they needed it ready and hot for was 6 p.m. the next day. So they started 10 at night. So what is that?
Did they cook it whole?
Yeah, that's my
18 hours.
Was it done in pieces, or was it done as like a whole sort of like pig roast type
thing? I
think
it's like flayed out.
Yeah,
okay.
In the pit.
Wow.
They did it.
How big is that?
Alamany Gardens.
Think about Alamany 520 farms. Pounds.
It's a big.
Well, at the beefsteak, they had 350 pounds. And that was like,
yeah, but
200
that wasn't
people.
It wasn't
no,
one
I know,
animal.
But I know, but I'm saying like that was like 200 people eating steadily for 3 hours. So add like another 200 pounds to that,
yeah,
and then wrap that
steer
all up in skin into one animal.
Yeah,
huge. Wow, awesome. So, so how did you? So, what I want to know, like as a bakery, what did you? Were you a bake bread?
I wasn't actually. I worked in front.
Oh, front of house.
I dated one of the bakers for a while.
How was that? Now, okay, without saying names, I was going to say, I've heard rumors that all bakers are just totally crazy.
Pretty nuts. Well, I mean, I love the entire
That's
staff
how you
want
to keep your community fan base. You want to label a food show as crazy.
No, hold on. Wait,
so this next segment is crazy.
I'm not going on like stereotypes. I'm just saying that like
everyone. I heard all.
I'm saying that like everyone I've talked to about bakers that they have worked with or worked for, crazy.
Pretty much. One of the bakers there apparently used to sleep with George Michael.
Nice.
And he quit shortly thereafter, but I heard a lot of really insane stories about that guy. Everyone else is, you don't really know what they do in their private lives.
Yeah.
And they're kind of, in any kitchen, you're always kind of trying to avoid the main folks in charge, especially the chefs, because they're kind of, first of all, they're wielding the knives.
They're wielding the knives. But second, I mean, to be perfect every day, day in, day out, six, 7 days a week. I mean, for
crunch
years
time.
On end.
It's crunch time.
Your brain, something's got to give. And usually it's the sanity.
Yeah.
So you said you also just got back from touring Europe.
Yeah, we went out.
Was that just, maybe not just.
It was pretty recently. We went out and played a festival on the Isle of Wight in the UK called Bestival.
And was it really the Bestival?
It was pretty nuts.
Who we played?
It was headlined by Massive Attack and Kraftwerk.
It was pretty
kick-ass. We had a really stressful time on our day, but the second day after
exhaustion,
Alex left early and missed the fun part.
It's true.
Oh,
cousin's wedding.
Yeah.
Was the wedding fun?
Incredible.
Good
food.
Food
was okay. Yeah.
What do they feed you at like Bestival? Because if you're going with bands, I mean, just like, you know, Lemonade.
That was the problem.
Yeah. One of the problems was that we showed up like after we literally drove from Paris to the Isle of Wight, like took the ferries and everything, and it was like,
was that fun at least?
It was kind of a long. Okay. I mean, we left at 5:30 in the morning from Paris. Drove to the ferry, took the ferry across, drove to another ferry, and took the ferry to the Isle of Wight, and then showed up and couldn't get fed. So that was kind of
how do you really get fed?
I don't know.
I've done a million events, and I know how that happens because you're like trying to take care of, you know, your massive attacks and everything, and then on the way down, and I can see how people. That's kind of just...
Yeah. I mean, from what I've heard, as far as the big European festivals, that's kind of not something to be too shocked about. But we haven't not played a lot of festivals. And the one we played prior to that was Primavera Sound in Barcelona, which
it's wonderful.
Like the best.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And
hospitality is incredible.
Yeah. It's in Barcelona. It's funny, I've heard that Primavera is like, from fans to bands, like everyone is taken care of.
Yeah.
It's funny because a lot of the bands that we talk to tour Europe... say that on the smaller shows, they usually get treated much better than like an American show. Like usually the promoter takes them out, or there's like a family meal at the restaurant. Like when Sharon Jones was talking about like them going on tour, and they're like, oh, when they go to Europe, they just eat and eat, they eat. But not so much for the festivals.
Yeah, festivals, it's a big crazy mess, and you know, I'm not gonna be angry about it.
Wait, it was really unorganized.
So now that we've gone this, what was the fun part that you missed out on?
The second day, we showed up, we were really stressed out, we had to play, we were, you know, underfed and couldn't get drinks and whatnot. The second day it was like, okay, now we can sleep in and, you know, our expectations are a little lower, so we'll just go buy some food and then we'll go see, you know, Lindstrom and the Raga Twins and, you know, a bunch of DJs playing crazy music and have a pretty awesome day and night.
Lindstrom's pretty good.
Lindstrom was fun.
Saw him at Pitchfork. Yeah. He was pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, he's cool. And it was like an outdoor stage. It was awesome.
I mean, you step back like, all right, I'm in Europe. I'm outdoors at a festival surrounded by awesome people.
Yeah, everybody's on drugs. It's cool.
What?
Yes.
What?
It's true.
At an electronic music festival in Europe? I don't buy it.
Just natural things like sassafras.
Oh, of course.
Right.
So I have to ask, do you guys have any shows coming up anytime soon? I know that's a traditional band question. That's my one.
No, this is good.
Okay.
Yeah, we're playing playing at Rutgers.
Yes.
On Friday.
I want to play at college. Now that I've been out of college.
We're going to.
Oh, yeah. We're going to go DJ Rochester.
Yeah?
All right. Yeah, we're playing at Rutgers.
I've heard some things. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's up, Issa? Thank you. Patrick.
Where at Rutgers?
Rutgers this Friday. We're supporting RJD2. Should be kind of interesting.
Wait, doesn't... Okay, Rutgers has this famous sandwich cart where Maxim voted the sandwich cart like the best sandwich
in
America.
Wait, is that where the... No, I'm thinking back into older tours.
I want to say, like, and excuse my language, I think the name of the sandwich is like the Fat Bitch or something
grease
like that.
Grease Trucks,
The Grease Trucks.
This is Rutgers. They have these trucks, and there's like six of them, and they're all kind of similar, but they have like really kind of obscene names for all of their sandwiches.
My Lord.
They're amazing. You can get like a sandwich that has
it's like
mozzarella
sticks
and
chicken
stuff.
Fingers, french fries. I mean,
and there's one called the Fat Bitch. Definitely.
So you guys know what you're eating now.
Yeah, and we'll put, they can't see it, but we'll put best sandwich in quotes because I can imagine. I would recommend it for after the show.
Yeah.
That might hinder the performance chowing down one of those.
Like college drunk food or something.
Yeah.
We still haven't answered when you're going. I mean, I know you're excited about the Fat Bitch, but when are you playing?
It's Friday.
Friday.
It's Friday. 13th.
Friday.
Ooh.
I always love college. I used to work at college radio and we didn't have any money for programming, which sucks because they always think college is a thing. But I always love college music festival programs because you're like, what? These people are playing together? And it's always awesome because it's like the five music people being like, my favorite band is playing. And
yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
And it's like, well, fuck you. My favorite band is playing. Like, we got enough money for everybody, which is not real world terms at all.
We're going to win over the backpackers.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's the plan.
They're going to love us.
Rutgers,
well, we've also got another show in Brooklyn coming up.
Oh, where?
The following Friday on the 20th at Glasslands. It's us.
Love Glasslands.
And Tan Lines. And
love Tan Lines.
Dude,
Tan
Crystal Lines. Fighters.
Who are Crystal Fighters?
Another Crystal band?
Another Crystal band. They're from Spain. They're dancey.
Oh, okay. By the way, Tan Lines at, was it the worst party? When we saw them this summer at the Yard?
Oh, at the Yard.
Yeah.
Oh,
my God. That was fun. I was there.
Oh, you were there?
That was blast.
I was just blown away. We're trying to figure out how to get
you
them
know,
on
how many, you know, how many, the show. How many hype bands? Oh,
yeah. No, I know, but
do
it's
you
just
hear,
Jesse works
and
on
then,
Mondays.
Like, they actually deliver. They were so good. I was like, who's this guy? Because I saw the guy walking around with like the two ponytail braids. I was like, who's this guy walking around at the Yard? And then he hops on stage.
Wait, no. That was the other band. That was
Q&A.
Oh, Q&A and Tan Lines.
Q&A
both awesome. Q&A was great. But that's like mostly Phenomenal Hand Clap Band, like side
pretty
project.
Much. I think the one spearheading it is our friend Alexis.
Yeah.
Yoyopolo. He's a San Franciscan.
Yoyopolo. That's a great last name.
It's a great name.
But yeah, that they're great. And then also like the we saw Restless People a bunch of times during CMJ. And then what was that other band? They were just backing that woman.
Glasser. She's an old friend of ours.
Yeah. High school.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So is that your scene?
So you
guys, is that who that you roll with?
Kind of.
Pretty much. It's kind of the True Panther thing.
Crew.
You know what?
Dean from San Francisco?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I met Dean at Tower Records when I was 15.
Wow. So you guys pretty much are like, we're all out for Tower Records.
He was passing out a punk flyer. I was wearing an Earth Crisis t-shirt, and he said, hey, do you like punk rock?
I got these flyers. It's in my mom's basement.
Do you want to come to the show?
Little, maybe like hair shuffle with the fingers.
Yeah, it was good.
That's awesome. I mean, you guys were on with a good crew. I mean, it's good music.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Dean's...
That's what we're into.
And right you guys all do food. You guys ever get together and do big like potluck dinners or barbecues?
We do. Yeah, we've done a few barbecues in the summer at Dean's Matador friends' homes, and then. But I don't know. Last time we had a dinner party, I can't remember. Wow. Glasser doesn't live here.
I've definitely dined with Glasser plenty.
Yeah, dined with Glasser. Sweet. All right. So thank you for being on here.
Yeah,
we got about 15 minutes left. Maybe have you guys play one more set.
Yeah, play some. Records.
Sure.
And then we'll come back. We'll say goodbye. No, we'll just close out with music.
Really?
I like ending with music.
What if we shout goodbyes over the
music? Okay, that works.
We can do that.
We'll
take some coordination. Anyway, so you're listening to Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio. Big shout out to Jack Ginsley and Rec Tech, our producer and engineer. Big shout out to Lemonade. Thank you, guys. Do one more set.
Thank you.
Big shout out also to Roberta's for giving us some free food. Fantastic. Big shout out for me for not turning out my phone.
Terry
Fairway Market in the city and in Red Hook. Check it out. Great food, great prices, good time. And next week unless both of us go to Austin, it'll be Cubic Zirconium performing live in studio.
Yes.
But and then also Roberta's, don't forget this Friday party.
The Slasher Strip Club fundraiser for their I think it's on a high school too, a high school rooftop garden. One acre.
And then also this Saturday, Austin Famous Friends, Russ Chimes, Space on 8th. I'm really sorry I did not dig up that email, but if you just write
it. If you just search VDRK blog, it's on there. It's in the sidebar.
Or you can just hit us up at music@fotpnyc.com.
It's a lot of information.
And then
people.
November 24th, Dinner with the Band on IFC premiering. Very excited. Shout out to the IFC family. Doug, Christine, Keisha, Jesse, Dana.
What's your favorite pizza?
That calzone.
The calzone. You?
Yeah. Calzone 1.
The calzone 1.
For me.
That yeah. It was like prosciutto, ricotta, pesto. Come to Roberta, support it. They're doing great things here. Anyway, we're figuring out the pulse. Ladies and gentlemen,
Lemonade.
Favorite
pizza in New York.
Oh, favorite pizza in New York?
We're new here.
Oh, I like Lenona on North 4th and Bedford.
Oh, Lenona is awesome. Lenona is really good.
I think Carmine's.
No.
See, that's what we thought first, too.
Really?
Yes.
Just to live here a little bit longer and you get the real insight. So anyway.
It was Juve morning. I bumped some Marilyn, sexiest thing that I have ever seen. So we started jamming while the steel band beating. She hold on to me and start saying, laugh to me, please, darling, hold me tight. Just make sure we going home tonight. I don't have no mind, so have no fright. We jamming from now on till broad daylight. And she tell me, jam if you jamming, whine if you whining, dance if you prancing. It's Juve morning. We jamming, we whining, it's bacana. I come out to play my carnival. Listen, honey, let me take it easy. Everybody, they're looking at we. Right to play in social, why not make bacana? That's the true spirit of carnival. Rap to me, please, darling, hold me tight. Just make sure we going home tonight. I don't have no man, so have no fright. We jamming from now on till broad daylight. Jam if you're jamming, whine if you're whining, dance if you're prancing. It's Juve morning, we jamming, we whining, it's bacana. I come out to play like carnival. Calypso and Spielberg, every woman jamming with a man. Jamming every corner, jamming in the center, and jamming shouting out so calm. Rap to me, please, darling, hold me tight. Just make sure we going home tonight. I don't have no man, so have no fright. We jamming from the one till broad daylight. And she tell me, jam if you jamming, whine if you whining, dance if you prancing. It's Juve morning, we jamming, we whining, it's bacana. I come out to play my carnival. Coming to the last lap, Marilyn fall down flat. Everybody tumble down on top. All she say, play mass, keep on jamming, don't stop. Anybody break the bandy laws. Rap to me, please, darling, hold me tight. Just make sure we going home tonight. I don't have no man, so have no fright. We jamming from the one till broad daylight. And she tell me, jam if you jamming, whine if you whining, dance if you prancing. It's Juve morning, we jamming, we whining, it's bacana.